Illinois is one step closer to a graduated income tax. Action by state lawmakers this weekend means the issue will be on the ballot next fall. Plus, a new bill would change math requirements for high schoolers here in Illinois. We'll hear how students looking for a career in trade could benefit. And Illinois was once home to millions of prairie chickens. Now there's just about 200.
The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in DeKalb, and WCBU in Peoria.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Coming up this hour, lawmakers are debating over high school math requirements, and we'll be talking about one of the species that helped give us the nickname of the prairie state, the prairie chicken. There are just about 200 left in Illinois. But to that point of lawmakers, I hope everyone enjoyed their holiday weekend. Hopefully you had a chance to relax, maybe enjoy a cookout. That is, unless you are a state lawmaker. Yesterday, Democrats in the state House gave Governor Pritzker a big boost towards delivering on his campaign promise to change Illinois' tax structure. In a 73-44 vote, the Illinois House approved changing our tax from its current flat rate to a graduated one.
We didn't get here overnight. It took organizations and advocates, legislators and community leaders, labor leaders and working families in every corner of this state rising up and demanding fairness.
There simply aren't enough rich people in this state to pay for the insatiable appetite of spending that we see here in Springfield.
This is an opportunity to fix the problems of Illinois and begin reestablishing the essential services that government is supposed to deliver.
You just heard Governor J.B. Pritzker, Republican Representative Avery Bourne, Democrat Representative Robert Martwick. Lawmakers weren't the only ones busy at work over the holiday weekend, so were journalists. And for more, I'm joined now by two of them, Illinois Public Radio's Brian Mackey and Jerry Nowicki from Capital News Illinois. Good morning, guys. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, Nyla.
Good to be with you as always, Nyla.
Brian, I wonder if we can just start with this big vote to change Illinois' tax structure. Can you share with us how events unfolded this weekend?
Yeah, they unfolded in a very long debate. It took more than 3 hours. Seemingly, I haven't verified this, but seemingly just about every Republican got up to speak against this. But Democrats have the numbers. They have a supermajority. It takes a supermajority to put a constitutional amendment on the ballot. So it passed, and now the future of Illinois' income tax is going to be up to the voters.
And so let's talk about what that would mean for folks listening. When we think about our state tax rate right now, we're at 4.95%, Brian, right? Everyone pays that. We just heard from Robert Martwick during the floor debate. He talked about how a family of four that had $61,000 in annual household income, this was the example he used, would save $271 under what's being proposed. What else do we know about how much people would have to pay? Because for everyone listening, that's, I'm sure, what they are most interested in.
Yeah, well, the governor has made this into a pretty simple talking point for himself. He says 97% of Illinoisans are going to pay less. The cutoff is about $250,000 if you make more than that. And it's not quite precise because of the marginal nature of the tax rates, but without getting into sort of a nerdy math discussion. Basically, if you make about $250,000 or more per year, you're going to see your tax rates go up. Once you get into that $750,000 for individuals or $1 million for couples, the rates are going to go up pretty significantly. And recapture all of your taxes will be at that higher rate. If you make less than $250,000, you're going to see a little teeny tiny tax cut depending on where you fall in that spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's pretty straightforward. I wonder, Jerry, if we can have kind of a nerdy math discussion for a second just to talk about where this money will go. The Pritzker administration has said that this proposal would raise more than $3 billion for the state each year. Do we know how accurate that number is, Jerry?
Yeah, all the estimates from what I've seen are $3.5 billion in added revenue would come from this proposal. And I know he's said he'd want to dedicate, I think, $200 to $250 million each year to add to the state's mandated pension payments. And just a whole other, the rest of that would go to fund programs that have been cut throughout the years.
Right. Brian, how much of a difference would this $3.5 billion make to our state in terms of revenue? When we've looked at shortfalls over the past couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong, the gap has been around a couple of a billion, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this would be huge. But even, I mean, you can't just look at the shortfalls in the past couple of years, because you have to look at, we still have a backlog of bills in the $6, $7 billion range. We have unfunded pension liabilities north of $130 billion. So even if you close the sort of year-to-year operating budget deficit, that extra money will be necessary to start making up for lost time in the past, for money that hasn't been put towards pensions and vendors who have been shorted year after year after year.
And obviously, Brian, there we have the huge systemic problems in the state, but how far would this go towards addressing our immediate sort of short-term budget problems?
Well, immediately, not the. If you're talking about yesterday's vote on the graduated income tax, it does nothing, because this still has to go before voters. 60% of Illinois voters have to approve this before it would become law, and that is not going to be on the ballot until November of 2020. After that, then the money would start to come in, presumably, if the lawmakers follow through with the rate bill that they're expected to, or at least the sponsor tells me he expects to call for a vote later this week. If those rates are in place, then that money can start flowing into Illinois coffers at the beginning of 2021. So in the short term, this doesn't have any effect on the state's finances. But after, assuming it passes, if it passes, after that, it would start ramping up pretty quickly.
All right, so we'll get to the vote in just a minute, because there are a couple details I wanted to ask you about. But Jerry, can I ask you just about, before we get to the vote among voters, what the roll call vote was like? Definitely among party lines, were there any notable exceptions here? Were there any Republicans that voted for this, Jerry?
No, and as Brian said, every one of them spoke on the floor against it. But there were two holdout Democrats, from Northbrook and Grays Lake, that's Rep. Carroll and Rep. Yingling, respectively, and no one was quite sure what they were going to do, but they joined the rest of the Democrats, and the one exception would have been one Democrat did not vote at all on the proposal, and no one is quite sure why at this point.
Who was that, sorry?
That was Rep. Andre Tappetti. He's from, I believe, Chicago.
Brian, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, there was a fun detail in that Capitol Facts this morning that he actually – it's not uncommon for lawmakers during the course of the day to not be on the floor for every single vote. It's less common for a big vote like this. If somebody, quote, takes a walk on a vote like this, they know what they're doing. But often they will just leave their key in their voting switch, and then staff goes around and votes green lights. It's a pretty common sight. It's maybe not the most savory thing for voters to think about, that their lawmakers are not – sitting there, you know, stroking their beard on or their chin on every single vote and you know, carefully considering that the staff sometimes goes around. But the majority of votes that happen in Springfield are pretty overwhelmingly one way or the other. So, but he took his key with him so that his switch could not be voted, and people were scratching their heads about it.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, Jerry, did we see any concessions to get those two Democrats who we were questioned about getting on board? Did Governor Pritzker have to make any concessions to get them on board?
Well, they said there would be a property tax task force. Representative Carroll gave that as the reason why he switched. I don't know if there was more to that we don't know about, but...
What does that mean, Jerry? What is this property tax task force?
The details kind of remain to be seen, but what they're going to do is try to figure out how to lower property tax bills, which the state does not levy or collect. So they're saying, using buzzwords like comprehensive reforms, it'll remain to be seen what actually comes from it.
Brian, go ahead, Brian.
the task force is sort of the, if we can't solve the problem, let's have a task force about it. That's sort of the Springfield mantra. So anytime you have something intractable and it seems like people are not going to be able to come to an agreement, you have a task force. We'll see if anything comes of it. The simple math of this, of the problem, if you have a problem with a higher income tax rate, right, you don't think that the state should be raising income taxes, well, that's the only way that you can really, well, the only way that a Democratic-controlled state will really solve the property tax problem. Now, Governor Bruce Rauner had some ideas about stripping collective bargaining rights from teachers and doing a sort of Wisconsin-style overhaul, but since that's been a non-starter with Illinois Democrats, the schools, if they cannot fund themselves through property taxes, they're going to need more money from the state or some other way, and so you'd end up with a higher income tax. So it is something that works in tandem with each other, but I think that, holding off on doing what the Democrats call fixing the income tax would not have, been a net positive for the local school districts in terms of their property taxes. This way, at least, Democrats say, they can put more money towards the schools from the state and seek to, maybe have school districts hold off on property tax increases.
That's Brian Mackey from Illinois Public Radio. We're also speaking with Jerry Nowicki from Capital News Illinois. If you have thoughts, if you have comments or questions about these proposed changes to Illinois' tax structure, you can give us a call at 1-800-222-9455, or you can text us. That number is 217-394-5765. Again, that text number is 217-394-5765. I wanted to play, Brian, you were talking about the debate on the floor yesterday and how lengthy it was. We have some audio from Republican House Leader Durkin. Here he is at the end of the debate.
Now, I have one last statement to make, and it is not meant for anyone in this chamber. It's meant for the Illinois citizens. And this should be the constitutional question that should be on the ballot before this one is posed. It's very simple. Based on their past practices, can you trust the Illinois House Democrats and Democrat Party of Illinois with spending more of your money to solve its budget problems?
Republican House Minority Leader Jim Durkin yesterday. Brian, I imagine, did we hear that argument probably from every Republican who spoke yesterday?
I mean, just about. There were some variations on the theme, but that was certainly the predominant argument, is that, sure, it sounds good, Governor Pritzker's message, to only say taxes are going up on the top 3% of income earners in Illinois, and only if you make more than $250,000. But come on, look at the Democratic track record in Illinois. They have not been good fiscal stewards of the state, although, frankly, that's been a bipartisan problem. And when the Republicans were in control, the state was in a stronger position because of global economic factors, right? There was still more industry. Revenues were still going up year after year. There had not been as much wage stagnation in the country yet. But the point they make is Democrats have not been good fiscal stewards of Illinois. And so, it's one thing. They say these are going to be the rates now, but don't trust them. They're going to come back in the future and go farther and farther down the income ladder. But, the Republicans, it's interesting to me that they oppose this quite so strongly, because the polling suggests that their voters, self-identified Republican and conservative voters, are more divided on this question. Now, as this becomes more associated with a Democratic governor, I'm sure the people will sort of revert to their partisan means, but the polling in the past has shown that even a bare majority of Republicans favor the general idea of higher tax rates on the wealthy. And, Democrats being able to say, well, it's only going to be the top 3%, that may sound good to some voters, and that's why Republicans are hammering the message, well, that's what it is now, but watch out in the future.
Jerry, we're still a long way off here, as Brian alluded to earlier. This doesn't even get on the ballot until next year, until 2020. What can we expect between now and then?
There's going to be a tremendous amount of money spent on online advertising, on television advertising. There already has been a ton of money spent in those areas by these, what they're calling, dark money groups. Think Big Illinois is one that's backed by Governor Pritzker. He's admitted to donating to that group, and they've been running ads seemingly nonstop.
Especially on streaming. I feel like every streaming service is running those ads, Jerry. I think I've seen them every time I'm watching something online.
Right. And in those, you hear the rhetoric, 97%, you see that number Brian mentioned a lot, and you see fair tax, and tax the rich more, billion-dollar budget hole. And then on the other side is Illinois Policy, which is the group that was tied to Governor Rauner, and Ideas Illinois, which is a business-backed group, and they're calling it the unfair tax, the jobs tax, blank check to the governor, all that type of rhetoric. So that's probably going to be omnipresent for the next year and a half.
And I'll say within minutes of the vote happening yesterday, Ideas Illinois had sent out a fundraising appeal. So in case there was any doubt, hold on to your streaming devices or television remotes.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I do, Brian and Jerry, want to ask you about a couple of other things, including a debate Sunday night about the Reproductive Health Act. We do have a very busy week ahead of us with the scheduled end of session this week, so I want to ask about the status of other big ticket items on Governor Pritzker's agenda and, of course, the budget, which we haven't gotten to at all. So, again, if you want to text any comments to us, you can do that at 217-394-5765. You can always save that number in your phone as our 21st text line. Share with us your thoughts if you support or against what lawmakers did over the Memorial Day holiday weekend. On the other side of this short break, we'll continue this conversation with Brian Mackey of Illinois Public Radio and Jerry Nowicki from Capital News Illinois.
The 21st is made possible in part by Krannert Art Museum at the University of Illinois. Open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturday, 10 to 4. Offering a world of art right here in Champaign-Urbana. More at kam.illinois.edu.
Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Nyla Boodoo. A big win for Governor Pritzker yesterday over the Memorial Day holiday weekend. Lawmakers in the Illinois House helping Governor Pritzker deliver on his campaign promise to change our tax structure. This will now go towards Illinois voters in 2020, changing to a graduated tax rate. As we've been talking with Brian Mackey and Jerry Nowicki, expect to hear lots of information, a lot of it incorrect probably, over the next year and a half about this tax structure. There were also a few other things happening. It's a very busy week as the State House reaches towards its almost a couple more days left in session. Brian, I want to ask you about a debate Sunday night about the Reproductive Health Act. Can you remind us what that is again?
Yeah, this is, as we've seen around the country, a number of states have started passing legislation that restricts abortion. This is Illinois' attempt to go the other way. What the sponsors say is that this will go through the Illinois statute books and take out things that could be triggered if Roe versus Wade is ever overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, as some red states seem to be trying to tee up that fight. Now, you might remember, wait, didn't we have this legislation?
Right. What about HB 40?
Yeah. House Bill 40, right, which nearly cost Governor Rauner the primary because he ended up signing it, angering the Republican voters. But yes, that was the sort of direct trigger repeal. These are other things in the law, such as apparently physicians could be criminally prosecuted for performing an abortion, even. But, you know, a lot of these things are stayed by court decisions over the years. Now, Republicans will point out, well, you say it's going through and cleaning these things up, but it also adds affirmative other things like employers that have 50 or more people, I believe, maybe off on that number, but have to, you know, sort of fund, or, you know, provide abortions through their health insurance, make that available. And there are other things, you know, changes in the law about technical things about how many physicians need to attend to certain procedures and things like that.
Right, things that we're hearing in other states as well, right, Brian? Right. So we're actually going to be talking about abortion on tomorrow's program, much more about this issue, so tune in to tomorrow's 21st for that. Jerry, as we're coming to the legislative session ending on Friday, I wonder what the status is of other big-ticket items on Governor Pritzker's agenda when we've thought about video gambling, other issues.
Yeah, right now it seems like we're all mostly working on rumors that the gambling is all going to be put together in a sports gambling package and a casino expansion to add up to 6 new casinos, possibly one in Chicago. While I was sitting here, I heard it's possible that marijuana legalization language, more language could be filed that could appease some of the Republican and Democrat lawmakers that were having trouble with it. And then, of course, you got the budget, the capital plan, which could include somewhere around $40 billion for road and bridge projects and vertical infrastructure. And they got what is it, 4 days to do it all.
Oh, Brian. Yeah, Brian, we haven't talked about the budget. We're almost out of time, but I wonder quickly if you can just let us know what needs to happen budget-wise.
Well, the biggest news in the budget is that it's not news this year. I mean, after 4 years where the budget was the main topic of conversation in Illinois state government, both parties seem to be saying it's on track. Now, there has been some whispering that maybe if the Democrats push through this pro-abortion rights legislation, that Republicans might decide to take a walk on some of these other issues where people had been nearing bipartisan agreement. But as of the last time I talked to people, we had this April surprise, $1.5 billion in unexpected revenue, and that that tends to make it a little bit easier to make the budget balance when you get a huge windfall like that.
Illinois Public Radio State House reporter Brian Mackey, Jerry Nowicki from Capital News Illinois. Both of you, thank you for taking the time to join us. Thanks for all the work you guys have done over the past couple days. And I know it's going to be a busy next few days. Well, Brian, we'll look forward to hearing more of your reporting on all of this.
Good to be with you as always, Nyla.
Thanks, Nyla.
Speaking of numbers, I wonder how much high school math you remember. How much of it do you use on a daily basis? It probably depends on the job you have. But there's an Illinois bill now back in the House after passing the Senate that would change requirements for high school math here in Illinois. It would allow geometry offered in technical education courses like carpentry or welding to count towards the current 3-year math requirement. Also, one of the 3 required years could be an AP computer science course. Advocates say this change gives students more practical skills for a career path straight out of high school. Critics worry about losing the foundational topics that are part of traditional geometry classes. Greg Budsben is the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Southern Illinois University, Edwardsville. Luke Brooks is the principal of Pleasant Plains High School near Springfield. Principal Brooks, Dean Budsben, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
A question for our audience. How much high school math do you use in your day-to-day? Would it have made a difference to you to have a class that was more focused on a specific career path? We would love to hear your thoughts. You can text us at 217-394-5765. We'll read them on the air. Don't forget to include your first name and your hometown. That's 217-394-5765. Greg, I wonder if I can start with you. Originally, this bill would have eliminated the Algebra 1 requirement altogether. Can you tell us about what it said originally and how it's been changed now?
Yeah, well, I mean, essentially, the original bill eliminated any constraints on what mathematics would have been. I mean, it really left it up to it. There's a number of different math courses that could have completed the 3-year requirement. And by adding Algebra 1 back in, I think both the House and Senate amendments do that. At least that foundational course has been added back. I mean, the concern is the geometry and having the so-called career path as such an early option for students and what it does in terms of their eventual potential for succeeding at the college level, if they so choose.
What do you think it does, Greg?
Well, I think it given to the economy today. I mean, we live in an information age. Mathematics training isn't necessarily all about simply content. It's about learning how to think how to think critically, how to understand how to do problem solving. Those are all things that are embedded in the traditional high school curriculum. And what it's going to do, I think, is give students a way out of that. I mean, if you're 15 years old and you're told that you could take a different type of math class or go to a career-oriented class, I think a number of students will choose that. And so what it does is essentially, at an early age, eliminate the pathway to college education. And with the economy the way it is today, this is not to say that, you know, one couldn't choose later in life. In fact, community colleges have all sorts of career options and trade education. Those will all be available to students still. I worry about this essentially bifurcation. I mean, switching students over to a more career-oriented pathway early on in their educational careers.
That's Dean Greg Budsman. He's a dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at SIU Edwardsville. Principal Luke Brooks is also with us from Pleasant Plains High School near Springfield. Principal Brooks, I think you disagree a little bit here in terms of the idea of allowing the flexibility for our high school students who maybe aren't college bound, correct?
Yeah, correct. And I'll be the first to say I'm certainly not anti-high-level math. And I will also say this, if there's ever a system where mathematics is a risk-free venture for kids, and it's based on inquiry, exploration, and problem solving, then mandate 4 years of it. You know, if it was really a risk-free venture for kids to play and grapple with math, then mandate it to the highest degree. The fact is it's not. These kids are demanded that they know it in a very, very abstract manner that we don't always have time to apply because we've got to cover so much content because so many things are geared towards the SAT. But we hold individual meetings with students, with every one of our students. I mean, you sit down four times over the course of your high school career here with your parents and our counselor, and we talk about what's best for you and we don't steer anyone towards that. I just want that option for students. And I've talked to enough people with, you know, high school math instructors, college math instructors, people with their PhD in math who I'm not saying they all agree with me by any stretch of the imagination, but in getting feedback from them, there is definitely a certain cohort of kids that kind of get left out of the equation. And we don't, you know, we just say 2 years of science. We don't say everyone must take chemistry, you know, because, and if they don't, we're leaving them shorted because they won't know what takes up space in our world now.
Principal Brooks, I wonder, is part of your argument also, and I think you said something to this effect, that you feel like a lot of high school math courses are geared towards standardized testing as opposed to teaching critical math thinking skills? Am I understanding you correctly there?
Sure. And this isn't this won't be a popular opinion in some regards, but if you really eliminated the SAT requirement, which I don't know, I think that started out as an aptitude test, and I think it's somewhat of a hybrid between achievement and aptitude. But you can go look at the stats on the GRE test, or, you know, what makes a good teacher? Was it their basic skills test, or was, you know, I don't know that there's really the predictive validity of the SAT, I don't know that I buy. And if you really eliminated that, if you eliminated that piece and you no longer had to gear instruction towards that to some degree, then I really think you have a case to go in and take pre-calculus and trigonometry and grapple with those numbers and apply it to the fields that are out there. I'm pro math and I'm pro kids learning math. I just want them to learn it in a way that is applicable to everyday, you know, to everyday professions. Not that they shouldn't have a base, and algebra is a good foundation to have. It's just that it's number one most failed course in community colleges.
Thanks for that, Principal Brooks. Dean Budsman, I wonder your thoughts on how math is being taught right now in high school based on what you're seeing for students who are coming into SIU the freshman year, do you feel like they've got the math skills that you want them to have right now?
Well, let me just begin by absolutely agreeing with your other guest, the principal, in saying that we need to do a much better job at teaching mathematics. And I couldn't agree more that the mathematics we teach needs to be based in applications and modeling. I actually am a mathematician. My discipline is mathematics. And I've had the privilege of working with Dr. Bob Moses, who, you know, the civil rights hero, who's a MacArthur Award fellowship. And we've been working around the country trying to develop experiential mathematics curriculum with funding from the NSF.
Oh, this is the algebra. Is this the algebra project, Dean Mutzman?
This is the algebra project.
Right. Yeah, and is the idea behind that that teaching especially low-income children algebra helps improve their economic circumstances?
Absolutely, it does. But it's also it's not just what we teach. It's the way we teach. But the experiential mathematics and teaching things that are based in applications doesn't in any way eliminate the critical thinking skills and the type of mathematics that students need to succeed at the college level. So I completely agree with the principal in terms of we need to change the way we teach mathematics. And I think that can be done across the board at the high school level. And I also agree with him in terms of the SAT. I think that that original SAT test was not designed to be a college entrance exam. I mean, that was not what its original exam was.
So I wonder for both of you, if I can just stop you for a second here, Dean Mutzman, I think I should ask both of you, do you think that this current legislation as proposed is working towards changing the way math should be taught? Do you think this is a Dean Mutzman, do you think this is a helpful move or no?
I don't. The way it's currently worded, I do not think so. I don't think it's going to help us move in the direction we need to move, which is really changing the way we teach mathematics in high school curricula. And what it's going to do is essentially give us a back door, give us a way to teach things in applications and things which without really having the critical content, at least. The way it's currently worded, I think, unfortunately, it's going to lead to fewer students being prepared to do the kinds of things we need to in an information age economy.
Principal Brooks, we're almost out of time, but I just want to ask you one last question. I know you told the House Education Committee that we scream college and we whisper career. I wonder if you think that's part of this bill changing maybe that philosophy a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so to some degree. Again, like I said, I in the district that I'm in, our kids are not, you know, they're going to take the very traditional algebra, geometry, pre-calculus route. But for some kids, believe it or not, they're very secure in where they're going and where they want to go, and their parents are on board. And we're working with some local unions, pipe fitters, and those pipe fitters, HVAC, and these people are actually going to assist us in creating some courses where they're getting a good quality math, you know, credit by applying these things through an internship, you know, and so I think it's good for those kids. And I just don't think that, I think it is disingenuous of me to sit there and look at them and their career paths and tell them they must know this content. I know too many people who make a heck of a good living, you know, in the trades, and, you know, but they've made up their mind and they know what they want to do, and they're pursuing it, you know. And so I hope that it helps some of those kids. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that we still don't need to be professional about it and see that they really understand and can grapple with math. And I think the other thing, and I agree with a lot of what the dean says, I'm pro math. I just want math to be, you know, to be better for kids, and computational math.
Right. So I'm afraid we're out of time, but we'll have to just leave it at that and see, as this bill goes forward, I guess, how much this changes, at least a little bit, to both of your points about the fact that we need to change the way that we're teaching math. We'll keep an eye on this bill again back in the House after passing the Senate that would change requirements for high school math. I want to thank Dean Greg Mutzman for being with us, the College of Arts and Sciences at SIU Edwardsville, Luke Brooks, principal of Pleasant Plains High School near Springfield. Guys, thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. One of Illinois' older nicknames is the Prairie State, although I'm not sure anyone actually still calls it that. I would love to hear from you if you do. Of course, there was a time when most of Illinois was actually made up of prairie grasslands. There used to be more than 20 million acres of prairie. Today, we've only got about 2,500 remaining. That steep decline is one reason why species like the prairie chicken have faced extinction for a long time. In the 1800s, we had millions of prairie chickens running across Illinois. Now there are only about 200. Bob Gillespie knows all about the Illinois prairie chicken. He is a site manager at Prairie State Ridge Natural Area in Newton, about an hour and a half south of Champaign-Urbana. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you, Nyla. I'm glad to be here.
I also wanted to welcome Rebecca Riley, legal director of the NRDC. That's the Natural Resource Defense Council's Nature Program, on the line with us from Chicago. Hi, Rebecca. Welcome back to the 21st.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Bob, you actually grew up on a family farm close to Illinois prairie chickens. What are your some of your early memories of prairie chickens? And I wonder if you could also describe them to those of us who haven't seen them, what a prairie chicken looks like. Yeah,
They are a very energetic animal, and they're about the size of a football, and they weigh, you know, about like a pound and a half. And in the spring, they have this very dynamic and enthusiastic courtship display, and they spend their time in, you know, the latter part of March and April dancing and booming, and basically the males display for the females. They're just very enthusiastic at that time of the year. And like you said, I grew up on a family farm that was nearby, so there was a lot of times that I would actually hear them from the farm and actually knew that prairie chickens were something really rare in the state.
So what do they sound like?
They describe the sound as booming, which is a little bit of a misnomer. What I like to describe it as is like if you blow across the top of an old glass pop bottle, it's kind of a sound like this. It's so it's almost kind of a ghostly sound, some people say. But that's not the only sound they make. They make cackles, and then they also make a sound, the males in particular, specifically for the females. And that sound is whoop, whoop, whoop. So they do a lot of whooping, a lot of cackling, and then the males make that booming sound for the females as well.
And so this is their, essentially they do all of this in a mating dance, right?
That's right. Absolutely, they do.
And I wonder, were they, when you were growing up, you said that it was rare to hear them. Were they as endangered when you were growing up as well?
Well, they were nearly as endangered. At that time, we had a few more birds in Jasper and Marion County, and we actually at that time had a few in Clay County. So they were still imperiled. They were still endangered in the state at that time, but they weren't quite as imperiled as they are now.
And why is that, Bob?
Well, when you're dealing with endangered species, there's a lot of drivers that lead to population declines. And one of the primary drivers is simply loss of habitat. They say that, you know, maybe 50% of the species that are endangered, maybe more, have been placed there due to habitat loss. That's mainly the driver in Illinois for the range restrictions to greater prairie chickens and their current imperiled status.
So it's loss of habitat in the sense of how much land do they traditionally need, Bob? Did they roam, or are they kind of in one spot and it's just that they don't have as much of that prairie grass anymore?
They are homebodies, if you will. In the essence that they are not migratory like some species are. So they require good quality habitat where they live, and that habitat they require is diverse grasslands, all right? And like you stated at the opener, you know, Illinois was originally the prairie state, and we had millions of acres of grassland. And today we have much, much less, hence the declines of many grassland species to the loss of that particular natural community and that habitat.
That's Bob Gillespie. We've been speaking with site manager at Prairie State Ridge Natural Area, talking to him about the Illinois prairie chicken. He has let us know what they sound like, which is great. Thank you, Bob. Rebecca Riley is also with us. She's the legal director for the NRDC's Nature Program. Rebecca, I know you live in Chicago, but you're a Central Illinois native, and I wonder, as a kid growing up, did you have a chance to see prairie chickens?
I didn't. I'm actually from Western Illinois, from a pretty rural area, but I've never seen a prairie chicken.
And to Bob's point, what does happen to prairie wildlife as we're thinking about the loss of habitat? How many species do you think we have lost or are losing across Illinois as we've lost prairie land?
Well, there's no question we're in the midst of an extinction crisis, not just in Illinois, but worldwide. The UN just put out a report a few weeks ago, and that report said up to 1 million species are at risk of extinction, many of those species within decades. Now, in Illinois, as you said earlier, we used to have prairie ecosystems across the state, and that prairie supported a lot of the wildlife that's native to the state. Now we've transformed a lot of that prairie to farmland, and that farmland, on that farmland, we use a lot of pesticides, we use a lot of fertilizers, and that drives insects and other species population declines. So what we need to do is we need to find a way to protect the prairie that exists today, to restore prairie in places like roadsides where we could have new prairie habitat, and to reform our agricultural practices so that they're more sustainable, so that we use fewer pesticides and fertilizers, so that these species can come back.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, I wonder if you can share a little bit about the work that you've done to have this. When we're thinking about 6 years ago, there were just about 60 prairie chickens left, and now we've got that number up to 200. What did you do to help the population increase?
Well, in 2014, we had a really a low dip in population numbers, and because the greater prairie chicken population in Illinois is so specific in its geography, where it's located in the state, we've had a couple of droughts and a couple very drastic hailstorms, which can be, you know, they're chance events that can be very damaging to a population of endangered animals. So that was a low point in the population here in Illinois. And according to the Illinois Greater Prairie Chicken Recovery Plan, it stipulates that at any time, if the population in the state falls below 50 birds in either Marion or Jasper County, that a translocation will be undertaken. And a translocation is basically we capture birds in another geography where they're abundant and then move them to Illinois to suitable habitats where prairie chickens are extant, and then release them so they bolster the population. And the reason, the main driver for that is it's an enhancement in the population already there, but it's important to bring those animals to the population to bolster that genetics that is still present in the state.
Right. So, Bob, is there, so when you think about the population, is there habitat in others? So there's really just two counties left where most of these chickens are, right?
That's correct. And the idea with the translocation is you want to release birds where there are birds present. So you don't want the animals to go extinct because prairie chickens are very gregarious. And if you release them in habitat that is vacant of other prairie chickens, they will just fly off and find or attempt to find another population somewhere.
So to that point, Rebecca, when we're thinking about how we would think about reestablishing this, Bob mentioned a state plan. What would you like to see with the NRDC, what would other environmentalists like to see in terms of helping reestablish prairie ecosystems? You mentioned roadsides for one.
Yeah, roadsides are one of the best places to reestablish prairies because they're available. And prairies can be quite beautiful on the roadsides. Iowa has, for many, many years, had a really interesting roadside prairie project where they plant prairie species along the roads and they maintain them for years. In Illinois, we've started to do a little bit more of that. The Illinois Tollway has done some prairie plantings, and IDOT has started some prairie planting projects. And this is great because it reduces pesticide use, it creates habitat for all sorts of species, and it cuts down on mowing, maintenance, and things like that over the years. So it's really is a win-win.
Bob, would that help from a chicken standpoint to be near roads or not really?
It could help to some degree, especially in the counties where prairie chickens are present. Any grassland that would be additive habitat would be beneficial.
Bob, I wanted to ask you about what Rebecca said about farming. Obviously, that's a big part of our state, and it's something I know that you care about as someone who grew up on a family farm. Are you hopeful that we can find a way to both meet the current needs of agriculture and still our prairie wildlife?
Certainly. Illinois has a strong agricultural legacy, and we have a very, very strong prairie legacy. So the history of the two environments kind of go hand in hand. And, our agricultural systems are currently, changing in Illinois and across the Midwest. And I agree that we should look for opportunities where those two different genres can kind of work together.
Mm-hmm. Bob, I wonder why all of this is so important to you. I mean, we're thinking about what Rebecca was saying about the fact that we have 1 million species around the world that are facing extinction. That might be daunting for a lot of people, but I'm sure there are other people who think, well, if they're going extinct, what can we do about it?
Yeah, and that's a tremendously unfortunate viewpoint, because organisms that they have intrinsic value, all right? So an organism that produces a beautiful spring call and dances for its mate and, is something to be enjoyed. And it's part of our heritage here in Illinois. And, the greater prairie chicken is just one endangered organism. All these organisms are important for the biodiversity and the heritage of our state. And it's just important to have those organisms present for, the generations that come after us, so they can enjoy them and utilize them in some cases for the benefit of man. And it's just a very important thing to maintain species so they don't go extinct and are lost to us.
Are you hopeful that will happen, Bob?
Absolutely. That's what I work on every day. I work at Prairie Ridge State Natural Area to recovered imperiled species, and greater prairie chickens are just one of those.
That's Bob Gillespie. He's a site manager at Prairie State Ridge Natural Area. I want to thank Rebecca Riley for being with us as well with NRDC's Nature Program in Chicago. We have tweeted out, by the way, a video of the Illinois Prairie Chicken Mating Dance, narrated by Bob, actually, that he helped with the Chicago Tribune. They produced that, so you can see that if you want to see it for yourself firsthand. Bob, Rebecca, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Nyla.
Thanks for having me.
That's all the time we have for today. A quick update on this very busy legislative week. The Reproductive Health Act is currently being debated on the floor of the Illinois House. This bill would expand insurance coverage for abortion procedures, remove more restrictions from our state's legal code should Roe v. Wade be overturned. The bill has been stalled for months but picked up steam over the weekend. On tomorrow's 21st, we are going to talk about the You Know Me hashtag that has popped up in the middle of a national debate around abortion and reproductive health. health. That's many women sharing personal stories of having abortions. We're going to hear about this with Northwestern professor and author Katie Watson. Our Twitter handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program with more analysis on background about what we're talking about. If you want to find our social media handles, leave us a voicemail, send us an email, just go to our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Libby Foster, Robin Lynn, and Alan Montesilio, who's our senior producer, Eunice Apalson, and Jasper Davidoff, our interns. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. We'll see you here tomorrow.